Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by another senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy. He is Major Stephen Coughlin, United States Army Reserves, now retired, the author of several extraordinarily important works, including Catastrophic Failure, The Blindfolding of America in the Face of Jihad, and most recently, a new monograph for the Center for Security Policy's Civilization Jihad Reader Series entitled Bridge Building to Nowhere, the Catholic Church's Case Study in Interfaith Delusion. He is a man who served with great distinction in the military of this country, including as what amounted to the duty expert of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for matters involving the enemy threat doctrine, Sharia, as he's taught me, is the way that the enemy tends to think of it as. And he has been extraordinarily effective, including in a presentation he made to the Act for America Northern Virginia chapter just last night. I was not able to be there in person, but was represented and had very, very high acclaim for your performance there. Steve, tell us a little bit about what you shared with the folks in Northern Virginia last night.
Thank you for having me on the show, Frank. What the brief really did was it really starts to tries to make it makes its first run at explaining the interfaith movement. And of course, the question I raise is, you realize that you put pressure on a local politician or your congressman because they're doing stuff with the Brotherhood, or you're starting to call out the Brotherhood in your local area, and all of a sudden, the Islamic Society mosque decides to have a media event where people are invited, and of course there'll be some local politicians, and they're on the stage when you decide to go and ask hard questions. Will be that priest, minister, and rabbi, and lo and behold, you get your question up. You get your question out challenging the imam for the Brotherhood connections, and you don't even get a response from him. If you're Jewish, you get a response from the rabbi. If you're Catholic, it's the priest. And if you're a Protestant or evangelical, it's the minister. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I started to realize, what the heck is that? You know, what's going on here? Because, you know, I was just in Omaha, Nebraska last week talking to a minister, and he said of all the times he's challenged the local Islamic society's a mosque, he's never once got an exchange with the imam. It was always the minister. And so I thought it started to become really important from a national security point of view to start to account for the fact that the Brotherhood operatives who would, you know, schmooze with our politicians and senior leaders always had the local clergy in the bag. And that's really what started the analysis. And what I found was that this is one of those areas where you really have to make a decision to take to heart that saying from Carlos the Jackal that there's an active alliance between radical Islam and Marxist. Because what I found was that the Muslim Brotherhood uses the interfaith movement to get the denominations, Jewish and Christian, to do their bidding. And on a deeper review, it turned out that the interfaith movement was created by the IAF, the Industrial Areas Foundation, which, of course, was formed by Saul Alinsky. And it's always interesting when you show the slide where that pops up, where people just go back in their seat.
Steve Coughlin, this interfaith dialogue business or bridge building that you've chronicled so well in your new monograph, Bridge Building to Nowhere, is really just one facet of what you've laid bare in terms of the larger enterprise the Muslim Brotherhood is called Civilization Jihad. As concerning as this is, this interference being run for the Islamic supremacists by people of other faiths, I know you're also concerned about the inroads that are being made in other institutions, including in our government, by the Muslim Brotherhood. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about this so-called Countering Violent Extremism program and what that's about in practice and what its implications are if it's not challenged.
Well, I think it could be said that working through the Center for Security Policy and the briefs I've been giving, we've been calling this out for a very long time, and now it's hitting a critical mass. If you go back to when the CARE was, you would see a trending left media entity like Wired Magazine or NPR come up with some bogus expose talking about what we're doing, immediately followed by a CARE release.
That's the Council on American Islamic Relations, of course, one of the Muslim Brotherhood-associated organizations in America.
Exactly. That's when they decided to have DHS take over the counterterror mission, and all of a sudden it stopped being counterterrorism and it started being violent extremism as a matter of unstated policy. Well, my view is the CVE, Countering Violent Extremism, is a piece of paper that covers over the actual counterterror laws and statutes, so that instead of doing counterterror, you're doing outreach to the community, even though your statutory mission is to stop terrorism. And all of a sudden, you start to realize that the CVE language doesn't sound anything like something that would support the Constitution.
And Steve, let's just drill down on that, because this is really a critical insight. Reaching out to the community, by which you mean the Muslim community in America, of course, has supplanted counterterrorism because of the notion, which, let's face it, has been promoted incessantly by Muslim Brotherhood-associated individuals who have been advisors to the Obama administration, and before that, to the Bush administration, that, in fact, the terrorists can only be countered if you, in fact, are getting on board the community largely dominated now, unfortunately, by the Brotherhood. So, I mean, we're really being sold a bill of goods here, it would seem.
Well, after the window dressing of other groups, it really is the Muslim Brotherhood. And going back to when DHS first started standing up the CVE practices inside DHS, Department of Homeland Security, the Civil Rights and Civil Liberties Division, they brought in the Muslim Brotherhood to help them set it up. So we know that they were involved in this. In fact, it was Judge Chertoff, when he was still at DHS under the Bush administration, who brought them in to first start the purge of the language. This becomes very important, because once we started working, doing community outreach with our Brotherhood partners, all of a sudden they took away our language, the only language that defines the threat of groups like Al-Qaeda and, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood. This is important because, you know, you will find right now that the very groups like CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, who helped set up the CVE, are now all of a sudden protesting it. So you're thinking, oh, wow, now the Brotherhood's turning against it because they'll see how bad it is. But actually, you find at the same time that MPAC is still pushing it, and internationally they're still pushing it.
That would be the Muslim Public Affairs Council, which is kind of a 3.0 generation of Brotherhood fronts, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. But here becomes the very big insight. If you ever take a look at it, you'll see that no matter how much an article or a statement about violent extremism might start with Bin Laden and Tora Bora, it always ends with somebody defending the Constitution. And this becomes important because as MPAC, Muslim Public Affairs Council, and internationally they're still pushing it hard, the CVE, you find that publicly, in the public media phase, CARE is protesting it. Why? Because they want the CVE to move forward after its intended target, which is not Muslim terrorist or the Muslim Brotherhood. It's people who believe that the oath to support and defend the Constitution is worth fighting for. And I mean that literally, because if you believe in something so hard that you'd stand up for it, you're an extremist. And if you'd fight for it, you're a violent extremist. And what you find is you find the DHS and the other law enforcement agencies increasingly use this Southern Poverty Law Center language to basically categorize people who believe in the Constitution as the violent extremists. And that becomes the issue with the CVE.
It's a matter of deflection on the one hand, and also being able to undermine the people who are most effective in challenging and exposing what the Brotherhood and other Islamic supremacists are up to in this country. You are among those, Stephen Coughlin, the author of Catastrophic Failure. We're talking about, as the subtitle suggests, the blindfolding of America in the face of jihad. We're going to have a chance to talk with Stephen Coughlin at greater length in a moment. Stay tuned for more on the Muslim Brotherhood in America and what we better be doing to counter it, with Stephen Coughlin right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs, like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined for another segment by our friend Stephen Coughlin, senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, the former duty officer and expert on the Joint Chiefs of Staff for matters involving Sharia and the enemy threat doctrine. He is also the author of several very important books, including Catastrophic Failure, The Blindfolding of America in the Face of Jihad, and Bridge Building to Nowhere, a new monograph subtitled The Catholic Church's Case Study in Interfaith Delusion. And we've been talking about delusions of various kinds, Steve. Give us a flavor of what's being done at the moment to try to suppress freedom of speech that might expose some of this activity, including your own.
Well, you know what? I think I could give you three examples right off the bat. And I think all three of them can come home and hit us. One is this last May, a man named David Shipler came out, and I think the name of the book was Freedom of Speech, and what this book is about. And in fact, they targeted us in one of the chapters called Protocols of the Elder Islam, accusing us of being anti-Islamic the way the Protocols of the Elder Zion is rapidly anti-Semitic. And what it does is it lays down the post-First Amendment free speech standard. Free speech is what is allowed, and hate speech is what will be tolerated. But once that paradigm is established, they're going to criminalize that hate speech and the people who put it out. And it will be the state that makes that determination. A second example is that now we're having clear information. Of course, I think CSP, you guys hosted the event in September 2012 when I gave a presentation on Benghazi that said what happened at Benghazi was a complete whitewash. And now groups like Judicial Watch are getting Freedom of Information documents that show, one, that we have 100% knowledge that Hillary Clinton, the people on the ground, knew that the people attacking them at the time were al-Qaeda and it was an al-Qaeda attack. Two, we have absolute knowledge now that the State Department, from Hillary Clinton to Rashad Hussein to Quinton Wiktorowicz, who was at the White House at the time, were busy working with the OIC, the Organization for Islamic Cooperation and the Domestic Brotherhood, to turn what happened in Benghazi into a discussion on violent extremism, a la the YouTube video clip. We know that they knew that that was not true when they did it. And what they overwrote the facts on the ground, the killing of a U.S. diplomatic officials, was the CVE narrative. So this is something, you know, of course, my classic brief is the disappearing language. We see that the CVE exists to overwrite facts in play, statutory law. And just recently, you guys had me go out to Warsaw, Poland, where we literally saw the emergence of all this stuff written in Russian, translated in English, about what the new hate speech laws are supposed to be. And I think what people need to understand first and foremost is if we can't tag it with the OIC or the Muslim Brotherhood, we could tag it with the hard left, Soros or the Russians. That this stuff coming at us at every direction, from the hard left on the flank to the Brotherhood in our front to the OIC and the international community, these things are completely synchronized.
You know, there's one other dimension of this, Steve, that usually goes unnoted in this context, at least, and that is an effort that's been made in the United States Senate by Democratic members there, led by Harry Reid, to amend the First Amendment of the Constitution in order to change it to restrict political speech. And boy, you start tinkering with that fundamental foundational freedom and document, there's no knowing where it will wind up, especially with this overlay, as you've just described. Steve, let me ask you about another initiative. Speaking of the United States Senate, Senator Ted Cruz there and in the House, Mario Diaz-Balart have introduced legislation to designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. You've been going to school on the Brotherhood longer and with greater effect than just about anybody I know. Do you think such a designation is warranted? And if it were to be designated in this fashion, what would that mean for groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, the Islamic Society of North America, the North American Islamic Trust, and on and on and on, groups that have been identified by a senior Muslim Brotherhood operative himself as elements of the Brotherhood's sort of infrastructure in America?
not only identified by senior Muslim Brotherhood operatives, but admitted into evidence in a federal court of law that upheld a challenge. I think that it's long, long overdue. I think that the problem we have, starting with the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, in 2007, is with the Brotherhood helping us understand the war on terror in the Middle East and letting them help us understand the community in America, we were convinced at the national security level that the moderate Muslim Brotherhood is the alternative to radical al-Qaeda. Now, what supports that view is that the Muslim Brotherhood says so. But what argues against it is the same people who trust them and captured them actually saying that the only reason they talk to us is to subvert us.
It's like the interfaith dialogue business, isn't it? That this is all about subversion.
If I could give an example, if we see the minister, priest, and rabbi doing the bidding of the Muslim Brotherhood in the interfaith world, what we see through this issue in Congress with the Muslim Brotherhood is that the Brotherhood, they're either the moderate alternative that they insist, or if we follow the facts, they are the mothership on which every one of these radical groups come. And they're on record as saying they only work with us to subvert us.
Yeah. Remind us, Steve, again, Steve Coughlin, let me just ask you, in that document to which we've been both referring, the explanatory memorandum on the general strategic goal of the group in North America, written by Muhammad Akram in 1991, as a report back to that mothership in Egypt, introduced into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial. What was the mission statement of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America, just for calibration purposes on whether it's a terrorist group or not and should be designated as such?
Well, I think the catchphrase in that is civilization jihad by our hand. And civilization jihad is clearly explained in terms of deep penetration and subversion.
Yeah, but more to the point, destroying Western civilization from within, as I recall, is it not? So this is not the moderate group that's been made out to be. It's not a moderate alternative any more than al-Qaeda is to the Islamic State or any of these other guys, is it?
It's not just that they're not moderate. It's that you cannot have an actual factual analysis to prove that. So what you have is the supremacy of schmoozing and feeling good meeting somebody over the facts on the ground that people who swore to support and defend the Constitution are looking past to get that feel-good movement is celebrating diversity.
And that's the catastrophic failure that you've been documenting in your book, among other places. One other thing that you've been involved in addition to your travels in OSCE, as it's called, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in Warsaw, you've been to Egypt a couple of times in recent years, and you've had a chance to talk to people who've been confronting the Brotherhood on its home ground for some time. Give us a sense of what the LCC government is up to there and whether they deserve our support to a degree that they've not been getting it from the U.S. government to date.
Well, I think that the CC government has openly declared their hostility to the Muslim Brotherhood and are seeking their destruction. And I think that when we've met with some people in Egypt, they have been very helpful to try to show us their terrorist roots, their current terrorist activities. I think there's a lot of things going on in Egypt that when we see something violent happen, we kick it over and say, well, that's a ISIS front group. But you can always show that the Brotherhood is deeply involved in these things. And so that what they're doing is they're helping us show that their international reputation is that. I think they're also deeply concerned that just as in the 80s when Hamas was kind of run out of the Palestinian territories, that they're worried that the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood today, who they're trying to capture, will move to the West in places like Virginia and London and camp out and then return.
I must say I'm a little concerned about it, too, as are you. Hence your important speech last night to the ACT of Northern Virginia chapter, in the part of the world that is, I'm afraid, very much in the crosshairs of the Muslim Brotherhood today. Steve Coughlin, our senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, thank you so much for the great work you're doing on so many of these fronts. Please, folks, check out Catastrophic Failure and Bridge Building to Nowhere, two of Steve's very important works. Come back to us again next week, if you will. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.